Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, we got Pamela Hughes and Barry Markson holding it down for you right now. And while my daughter is out on spring break, and I know a lot of your kids are out on spring break as well, whether they're in public schools or charter schools, that doesn't mean that the state lawmakers down at the Capitol are on any sort of spring break, because they are getting bills through committees, through the Senate, through the House. And there's one that we've been keeping a close and a particular eye on, and this is a bill to reform charter schools in Arizona. Now, Arizona has over 500 charter schools. We have a ton of them. And you know what? I think it's both a blessing and a curse. There are some amazing charter schools out there. This isn't an indictment on all of them. But Barry, my issue with charter schools has been they seem to play by different rules. They get more money per pupil funding than the public schools. And I get why, because they can't go and get bonds or overrides from the community. So I get that. But there should be some rules that are universal, like you have to have competitive bids when you're going to be spending taxpayer dollars. And there should be a level of transparency so that we know where these taxpayer dollars are going, because some of these charter school operators are making millions off of them.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because I think the idea of charter schools is good. I think the idea of choice for parents is good. And we really, in Arizona, we have a lot of that here. Just the fact, take the charters out of it, just the fact that we don't have to go to the school in your neighborhood anymore. You can go to the next neighborhood. You can go to the next city if they have room to get in. Right. And that's been really good, because some schools are better for certain kids. And it's got, I think it has improved the public schools, because it's made them more competitive. But the problem with some of these charter schools is some of them are not good, which is bad. And a lot of them are being run, all of them, as businesses. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it is when, as you're saying, there's no bid contracts, they're awarding bids to their own companies or their own relatives. And there are people who are supposedly running these publicly paid for schools who are literally making millions and millions of dollars. And this bill does nothing to fix that.
So let's give you some examples here. So we're not talking in like hypotheticals. Basis, which is one of the premier charter schools in the Valley, and not just in the Valley, my goodness, they get name recognition across the country.
No, they're the number one school in the country and things
absolutely.
Like that.
And so they're an example of like education and, you know, doing things right and being proud of it. But the operator of Basis, they've granted these no-bid, multi-million-dollar management contracts to companies owned by their founders.
Right.
So Basis, for example, they paid over $11 million to a management company owned by the founder.
Right. The guy who runs the school. It's the schools. Yeah.
And then he goes off and he buys, you know, this big old condo in New York City, while you've got parents at Basis that have been asked to donate to teachers' salaries.
Right. And that's, it's not right. And that's what a lot of these charters do, in the better neighborhoods especially, is they get in there and they can't reject anybody because there's no tuition. But then the first thing they say is, we like everybody to give us $1,500 a year to go towards teacher pay and things like that. And of course, you want the teachers to be paid. But in the meantime, there's someone who owns these schools, these public schools, and they're making $11 million a year. It's really amazing. And the fact is, Kate Brophy McGee, who pushed this forward and talked about it in her reelection bid, talked about actually reforming charter schools, and they didn't do it. That's what it comes down to.
Well, you know what? She had bipartisan support initially.
Yeah.
The bill initially had bipartisan support. But the Democrats that were going to support her bill withdrew it after some of the measures for reform that they wanted weren't included. In essence, the teeth of the bill got taken out of it in the Senate. So
here's, I mean, I look at it this way, Pamela. Is it, do we think as citizens in Arizona who pay taxes, do we think it's okay for that Primavera Charter Schools CEO, Damian Creamer, to pay himself $10.1 million? Do we think it's okay for him, even though his school was failing, by the way? Is that okay if it happens with somebody else? I think the answer for most of us is no, that's not okay. This bill does not address that. Is it okay for state legislator Eddie Farnsworth, who votes on this stuff? He doesn't even recuse himself from the votes. He votes on these bills that benefit him personally.
Uh-huh.
He made $13.9 million last year selling his school. this bill does nothing to keep operators from doing that. Is that okay with most of us? I would guess not.
No.
The bill doesn't address it. It doesn't address the basis people getting to buy an $8.4 million New York City Central Park condo. It doesn't address those things. Now, they're businesses. They're smart. I don't begrudge people their success, but there should be transparency. There should be rules in place, just like there are for public schools. There should be contracts that are bid on. If you want to open it up, and if you get a lesser bid from another guy, let's take that bid, because this is all public money.
And that's the part. That's the part that gets me, Barry, is the public money aspect of it, the taxpayer dollars aspect of it. I'm not going to begrudge anybody's success. You want to go out and make money? Make money.
Yeah.
Like, go for it. I'm all for the American way. That's fine by me. But when you are doing it on the backs of taxpayers and, in my opinion, exploiting the system, a system that does need true reform, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Especially when we look at what the public schools are going through in the state of Arizona. It's two different games, but they're both getting taxpayer dollars, and that's the big thing.
Right.
If you want to go and make a ton of money, go for it. But when you're being financed with public money, there's accountability, there's transparency, and there are expectations that I think everybody should play at.
Yeah, and there's two things I do want to mention here. There's one good thing in the bill. It gives the Attorney General's office the right to have civil subpoena power over the charter operator. So now Mark Brnovich can go in and if he sees something's wrong and he wants to investigate, he can require them to give up their documents, which, believe it or not, they didn't have to do before.
That's what I just heard you say.
Yeah.
Like, you're saying, okay, he now has the power to do this, but what I heard is, wait, he didn't have it already?
And he also has the power now to prosecute procurement and purchasing violations. So that's a nice thing to have. But when you're looking at whether this is a real charter school reform bill, look at it this way. In every year before this, Democrats put forward charter school reform bills and every Republican voted against it. This bill, every Republican voted for it and every Democrat voted against it.
Well,
so is this a sham or is this really a reform bill?
Well, when you have the lobbyists for the charter schools helping to actually write the bill, you tell me.
Yeah.
You tell me.
That's exactly right. You got their organization writing the bill, and that's when the Democrats started getting out of it. It may do a few good things. Kate Brophy McGee calls it compromise, that if you want to get something passed, it's compromise. This isn't compromise. Compromise isn't when all the Republicans vote for it and all the Democrats vote against it. That's just giving in. That's just giving up.
Here's the part of the bill that just kind of made me chuckle a little bit. Listen to this. Okay. So it would... This bill coming out of the Senate, it passed the Senate, it's going to go to the House. Prohibit charter schools from buying goods or services from a charter operator or a governing board member or an immediate family member of the charter holder or the governing body. Good. That's good.
That sounds good.
That sounds good. But wait.
There's more.
Always is. Dot, dot, dot. Those prohibitions can be ignored, however, if a majority of disinterested board members approve it. The purchase is disclosed, and it deems to be in the school's best interest. So it's like, okay, yeah. You know, you should have just stopped at the first line, and I would have been like, cool,
yeah.
Great. You're playing by the same rules.
Right.
But then they have to put in that little caveat just in case.
This is what gets me about politics. I think Kate Brophy McGee came into this with the right idea, and she's always been for education. She's a Republican who isn't.
She ran on.
Exactly. But so... wouldn't it have been great if you had real compromise where you get some middle road Republicans and some middle road Democrats and you come up with something that's real, real reform, not putting charter operators out of business, not taking away their right to make money on their business. But how about something that actually puts in place real reforms and treats these schools like they are, which is public schools, to some degree? She could have done that. There could have been enough Democrats and enough Republicans to do it. Instead, she went full partisan and just changed the bill enough until every Republican said, okay, even Eddie Farnsworth, who's a charter school owner and just made $13 million.
Yeah, exactly. I love the idea.
It's a shame.
It sounds like a great idea.
It's a shame.
But I don't hold my breath for, you know, our elected political heroes to behave that way.
It's a shame. No question about it.
So, again, I've got Barry Markson in with me today. What part of the valley do you live in, Barry?
In Scottsdale.
Okay, I live in Gilbert. So, commute. Long way every single day. Ooh, the things I could show you and tell you about on our highways and byways during the morning commute. Well, we've got the list of the top 10 states for aggressive drivers. We'll tell you where Arizona falls in on that list.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Oh, the morning commute. It hasn't been bad this week because of spring break. Thank you. Yeah, if you're kicking it at home with your kids right now, we appreciate you staying off the roads during rush hour in the morning.
Yeah.
Getting to work a little bit faster. I know that that'll change a little bit next week and even more so the week thereafter. But when it comes to driving, Gas Buddy is out with the states that have the most aggressive drivers. And before we tell you where Arizona falls in on this list, they also took a look at cities. Cities, not just states, but cities with the most aggressive drivers. And Barry, I've got Barry Markson in here with me today. I want to ask you, where's the craziest place, we'll say in the United States, because you go abroad, like, let me tell you something, driving to Costa Rica, you take your life into your own hands. But in the United States, there are some cities you also take your life into your own hands. Where's the craziest place you've ever driven?
You know, the craziest for me personally, and it wasn't that it was that crazy, but I was inexperienced, was New York City, in the city when I was like 18 years old.
You drove in NYC at 18.
I did. I went with my family.
And you survived.
My parents got out of the car to go look and do something, shopping or something, and we couldn't find a place to park, so they just said, just drive around. And I'm literally just driving around the block. It was frightening.
Oh, yeah. You take your life into your own hands.
But I'll tell you, it's a good lesson. And I think people who grow up in those environments, you learn quickly how to drive appropriately and how to be safe, but how to get to where you're going quicker.
New York City does not make the top 10 cities with the most aggressive drivers. Does that surprise you?
It does. And a lot of it is because of the taxis there. Have you been to New York City?
Oh, yeah.
It's like being inside a video game. You're sitting in the back. You've got that glass panel in front of you, and you're just looking out the windshield, and the guy is just weaving in out of traffic like you're on a video game. It's unbelievable.
Craziest place I've ever driven was Boston, in and around
really?
Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Boston drivers are bananas, let me tell you, all right? That was crazy for me. I've never driven in L.A.
Driving in L.A. is the worst. It's not crazy, it's just you're at a stop all the time.
And I think that's what makes people aggressive.
Oh.
Because L.A. made the top spot of the most aggressive cities for drivers in the country. But when you're looking at states, we made the top 10. Arizona.
Hey, now.
We're number 10. So
that surprises me.
It does?
Well, I don't think we're the most aggressive. I mean, I think I'm an aggressively safe driver. That's how
it's everybody else.
Well, it is. It is. Yeah. It's the non-aggressive drivers who aren't safe. It's the guy driving 10 miles below the speed limit in the left lane that's not safe. I'm safe. If you just get out of my way, everyone's going to be fine.
You know what? I've just gotten kind of accustomed to it. I, too, am an aggressive driver. More so. Like, I'm becoming acutely aware of it because I've got a 9-year-old daughter, right? And she sits, obviously, in the back seat. And I was driving her to soccer practice the other day, Barry. And I'm like, geez, seriously? Like, come on! And I'm like, John behind the wheel. And then, like, I look in the rearview mirror and I'm like, sorry, honey. She, you know what she says to me, Barry? She goes, "That's okay. Pap's a lot worse than you are." My dad, she's like, "Yeah, he yells a lot more and he says more bad words."
Really?
And I was like, "Okay, well, I got to have a conversation with Pap." I said, "But here's the deal. I drive this way because I learned it watching my father."
Yeah.
I don't want you to drive this way by watching it from me. But yeah, you know, in my commute, when she's not in the back seat, I'm a little aggressive.
Yeah. No, I get aggressive, too, on the commute. And, you know, we go up to Flagstaff sometimes, that I-17 on the way up there, and people get aggressive. And
okay, but how about this? What do you define as aggressive? How do you define it when you're driving?
When I guess I go a little over the speed limit. And my thing is, if everybody just drives appropriately, to me, it's all about just being polite. Mm-hmm. If you're not passing somebody, mm-hmm. move over so mm-hmm. other people can pass. It's all about that. It's not, I never flip anybody off. I don't slam on my brakes. I don't do anything that's unsafe. It's just that there are people driving as if they're the only people on the road.
You know what irritates me? Since you asked.
Yeah.
Since you asked. Is when there is enough room for me to, you know, turn on my blinker and get into, like, the right lane or whatever. So I'm trying to get into a lane. And there's enough room to put on the blinker, and I go to go over. And the guy that was behind guns it so that I can't get over.
Right.
Aw, oh, geez. Yeah. And you talked about, you know, like, I don't flip anybody off or anything. I don't either. I'll jaw. Yeah, I jaw behind the wheel. But you know what I do? I wave at people, and I smile. That ticks them off.
Really?
Like, oh, geez. There was one. Oh, I got to share. There was one guy. I was on Chandler Boulevard, and I will admit, I cut him off. Okay. All I did. Right. I will admit I was wrong. I cut him off. I was in the left lane trying to get in the right lane and I had to get into a Home Depot. And so I did. Oh, there it is. Boop. You know, and I got over. He lays on the horn and I, you know, I just kind of, yeah, I put the hands up like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's me. It's me. I know it. Okay. I know it. Like, it was my bad. He gets into the next lane, comes up right next to me, is flicking me off and everything. And I just smile and wave. He pulls over in front of me, brake checks me.
Oh, right? Wow.
Right as I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to the Home Depot parking lot. He goes down to the next entrance, comes in the parking lot.
Wow.
And I'm like, what do I do? I park the car. I'm like, just get into Home Depot. Just get. He circled up and down the lanes looking for my car. And I'm like, car's going to be keyed by the time I come out,
that's
probably.
That's some serious road rage.
It was serious road rage. Yeah. And I'm like, I was wrong. I admit it. But I think what really ticked him off is when he got up next to me and I just smiled and waved. I think that's what it was.
I think you're smiling and waving with a little extra attitude. That's what I think.
I just smile and wave. And I don't do like the one finger salute. That really ticks people off.
The one thing I would like to see is Representative Bob Thorpe from Flagstaff. He has a bill pending to put signs on all of our freeways that say the left lane is for passing only. Move over to the right. What a great idea.
Preach, brother.
That guy,
preach.
I want him to be the next governor.
There we go. All right. Well, we do have the most, some of the most aggressive drivers in the state, but Phoenix did not make the top 10 cities list. So at least we got that going for us.
There you go.
All right. This next story, it's one you're going to want to tune in for. How do we describe this? So there is a military man. He died. Now his family wants to use his DNA, I guess you can say. To continue the family legacy. Should they be able to do that? Yeah. We're going to talk about this next. You'll see what a judge ruled on it here on KTAR.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, and I'm going to need some perspective on this from the guys in the room here. I've got Barry Markson in with me today, and I'm also going to be dragging super producer Stevie Z into this conversation because, Barry, you and I, we've got our kids, right?
Yeah.
You've got two.
I've got two.
Two sons?
Two boys, yep.
Okay. I've got a little girl.
I don't want any more.
Neither do I. I'm good. One and done. All right. But super producer Stevie Z, yes, we might make you. I'm going to sound like your mom. So were you thinking about kids? Like
none that I'm aware of at this point.
All right. Well, okay. So why are we talking about all this, folks? There's a story. Oh, I don't know why this makes me uncomfortable. I'm just gonna go for it, okay?
Just pull the Band-Aid off. Do it.
Okay. All right. I'll read you the headlines. Parents of a deceased West Point military cadet want to save his sperm so that they can have his child.
Ew.
Okay. Yeah. So their son, tragic accident, 21 years old. He was at West Point and a skier.
And by all accounts, a really good guy.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. The accolades this young man had.
Right.
I mean, he was the president of the Cadet Medical Society. He was expected to receive a commission as a medical corps officer, attend medical school. Like, an amazing young man. And was on the slopes. Something happened. And another skier found him. Mm. His spinal cord was fractured. And he was declared medically dead 3 days later. Now, he doesn't have a girlfriend, doesn't have a wife.
Right.
He is apparently the only male child in the Zhu family lineage. That's his last name. Parents say this is because of China's one-child policy, which forced his uncles to only have one daughter. So they want to retrieve his reproductive material so that they can, A, leave along his legacy as a good man. He wanted to have children, they said.
That's what I call it, too, my legacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As well as carry on their name. They went to a judge.
Yeah.
They got a court order. And the judge says, you can get the material. You got to store it until this goes through the entire court system. There are the folks' facts. Oh, I'm looking at you over there, Stevie Z. You were just shaking your head. What initially comes to your mind as this? Should the parents have the right to get this material to carry on his legacy and the family name? Go.
I thought no before I even realized that he didn't have a spouse or even a girlfriend. I think that that is just the nail in the coffin for me.
Why?
Because you don't even have somebody that you were planning on doing this with. You're just giving your parents or your family the right and the... They would own, for lack of a better term, they would own the right to his...
Child.
To his child's DNA, basically. Yeah. They could do whatever they want with it. And then the other thing that comes to mind, I'm just being cynical here, how long before we have families who are not as honorable as this, and they own the rights to this, and they go and sell the opportunity to have a child with your family?
Wow. Holy cow.
I'll take it even in a little bit of another direction.
Look at you guys.
Just a step different.
What's that?
What if your son,
yeah.
What if Steve, can I call you Stevie Z?
Yeah, go for it.
What if Steve decides, you know what? I don't want to have kids.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm even going to get married, but I don't want to have kids.
But mom and dad feel different.
They want to keep the name going. They're like, we want his sperm. Can they get a court order and order you to give them some sperm so they can make their own baby?
And thing is, like, I would need, for this to be okay, I would need a signed letter of intentions from the deceased, and it would have to be very specific and planned out. Like, this is what I want to do, this is who I want it done with, because you're giving the parents the right to choose who has a child with the deceased person.
What if he was married? What if he was married and they were trying to have kids and then he died?
Well, then I think it would be. And I mean, at that point in time, you would either have to trust her that this is what he wanted.
Right.
Okay. But Steve, you're not alone in this, because there is actually an ethics committee for the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. They sound like a load of fun.
I'm just going to let that one go, by the way.
They have guidance on this. They say such a procedure is considered ethically justified if there is written documentation authorizing the procedure from the deceased, but medical programs are not obligated to do so. So they're kind of going to what you're saying. They're saying if there is written documentation, then yes. I mean, like, this is what I want.
You have to give it to them, like, in your will, in essence. It has to be in writing. It has to be, these are my wishes. If I die, then my parents can have my reproductive stuff and go to town.
Because, I mean, like, the family, the Zoo family's legal team argues that his next of kin should be enough for his parents to have the right to continue their son's legacy. Ooh, man.
And it's definitely one of these things where it isn't like the family, they're not looking to sell anything. They miss their son. They want to have you know what I'm saying? They're coming at it from the right place. I don't want to treat the parents like they're bad people, but it's an ethical dilemma. And is it really what he would want, that his son or daughter will be in this world and raised without him and not, you know?
That's the other part, Barry. Yeah. That's it. Like, at the end of the day, we're also talking about a potential child here.
Yeah.
And what would this do to that potential child? Where's your dad?
Right.
Who's your mom? Like, it's messed up.
Well, there'll be a mom somewhere, right?
Yeah, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the mom that the dad would have wanted, because the dad never got the chance to choose the person.
Right.
And so it's one of those, like, moral dilemmas that's going on here, and it's going to be playing out in the court of law.
And what if this baby who grows up and it becomes a person becomes like a serial killer? What do we do then?
Oh, man. Jeez. You guys think of this, like, way differently than I do.
And, like, are the coroners going to have to start asking upon the death of anybody, okay, what do you want to do?
No,
you know,
organ donation.
No, but that's the thing, is this guy did not say or have written intentions that he wanted this to happen, but he was an organ donor. That was like the extent of his intentions with his body.
Maybe that'll
organ
be a
donation.
That'll be in your driver's license next to organ donor. Yes or no?
Are you a deceased sperm donor? Is that what we're calling it?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Carry that little.
I don't think we
carry that cooler
here,
full of
we?
Ice around everywhere, so you can make the collection when necessary.
Yeah, a little bit squirmish there.
This is not good.
No, let's move on from it.
All right.
How about this? How would you feel if you could bid on your kid's teacher for next year.
Oh.
Because there are a lot of parents, they know who the good teachers are in the
yes.
school, right?
Yes, they do.
And they'll go to the principal and they'll try to advocate to get that teacher. What if you could just, hey, here's some cash for the PTA. You know what? Now give me Mrs. Davis, all right? You know, whatever it may be.
At the school fundraiser, they're yeah. bidding on the teacher?
Well, it's happening in one state. We're wow. going to tell you about it coming up next here on KTAR.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
All right, so a lot of kids out on spring break right now. They're going to be moving into the last quarter of the school year. And so many parents as well as educators already have their eyes set on 2019 to the 2020 school year. So if you've got a child in a school and, you know, they're going to be going to the next grade and you've identified the, you know, like Riley's in the third grade. If I've identified a fourth grade teacher that I want her to have next year, I can't just simply go into the principal and say, hey, I would like Riley to be in this class. That's not how it works. There we go. The other one, too. All right.
Let me see if I remember how to do okay. this now. All right. They don't let you do that because then every parent's going to be in there. And it's, I want this teacher and I want my daughter to be with her two friends. And the one friend doesn't want to be with your daughter. And it's a whole, you can't do it. So
yeah. And imagine like the logistical nightmare that that puts principals in, of which I've talked yeah. to my sister about, as far as they've got to do what's best for the kids. And what you think is best for your kid may not necessarily be really what's in their educational best interest. So there's a lot going on
exactly.
there. So what the heck was going on at this Oregon school? Well, they decided they wanted to raise a little extra money. I got nothing wrong with that.
The PTA's got a fundraiser.
PTA decided they've got this fundraiser. And you know what? They're going to have an auction.
It's better than selling candy bars.
Well, you know, maybe, I don't know. I like some candy bars too. They decided to hold an auction, right? So you're thinking, you know, are they auctioning off pencils? Are they auctioning off? I don't know. What are they auctioning off? Well, they decided that they were going to auction off, you know what, picking your teacher for next year.
A PTA organized auction benefiting Markham Elementary School had some unexpected consequences when parents were given the choice to bid on their child's next teacher.
That is brilliant. What a great way to make money.
Bid on your child's. Well, it sounds good, kind of like in theory.
I know when my kids were in elementary school, if you could do that, the PTA would have raised thousands and thousands of dollars. It would have been crazy.
But at this school, it may not have been as crazy. Here's why.
Days after it was held, Principal Sean Garnett writes in an email, staff questioned whether it was equitable. 50% of Markham students come from underserved communities per district data records, and 46.1% receive free or reduced lunch.
All right. So it's kind of a mixed bag of, you know, the population, I guess you could say, of students at that school. But six parents bid on a teacher, and the PTA made about $1,600 off of it.
Yeah.
Of which they had to give back because right. this didn't go over too well.
So, I mean, I get the objection here is that yeah. some of the parents can't afford to do this. They can't get involved in bidding. They're just trying to put food on the table. So are their kids going to be left with the less good teacher? But the other side of that is if the PTA raises $1,600 or whatever it is, and that goes to making the overall experience at the school better, or goes to make the teacher's performances better or for training, is that better for the school overall and therefore lifting everybody up, not just those with parents willing to spend the money or who have the money?
What about this?
Yeah.
What if the money that was bid on the teacher went back to the teacher?
Well, and that's that would be interesting, right? So it would give some incentive to the teachers. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Do you just give teachers raises because they've been there the longest, or do you do it based on merit? Should the best teachers make more money? The problem with that is it's going to create a lot of issues in the workforce at the school.
And oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? It would just be an absolute mess. But you know what goes on at these schools. They auction off the best parking spaces. They auction off who gets to drop off their kids without standing in line.
Seriously?
Oh, absolutely. They find the things that parents want the most, and then they auction that stuff
off.
Have
you been to one of these like that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, seriously?
No, our school had that. You could buy, every year they auctioned off the best parking spaces in the school. So when you wanted to drop your kid off, you had like the spot, you know, next to the principal's spot. And they had a couple of them in different places, and that's what they did.
I did not know that.
Absolutely, they do that. And they raise a lot of money, because for some parents who are there, who are helping a lot, it's a big thing. They can pull in, and their spot's right there. They don't have to wait. They don't have to drive around. It's nice.
Bidding on your child's next teacher. It happened in Oregon. They ended up giving the cash back to the parents. But the PTA, apparently they were auctioning off some other really great things there, because they made some $52,000.
Yeah, well, maybe they had a silent auction or something, too. I don't know.
Yeah, but still, that's a lot of cash for a PTA to be making. They're selling more than parking spaces to bring in that level of dough. Hey, you know what? The 9th annual Larry Fitzgerald Double Play Celebrity Softball Game, it's going to be returning to Salt River Fields on Saturday, April 27th. Head on over to the rewards page at KTIR.com for your chance to win tickets, and you got some complete info that's going to be going on for you over there as well. So coming up next, there was a court decision. You may have heard of this because you went, I didn't know they could do that. So a court in Connecticut decided that they were going to allow parents. These are the parents of the Sandy Hook shooting. Remember that? The shooting victims. Well, they were going to allow those parents to sue the gun manufacturer. Of which I'm like, I didn't think you could do that. I thought we had laws against it. Well, apparently they found a bit of a loophole. It may not be as significant as you think it is now, but it does have some potential. We're going to have KTIR legal analyst Monica Lindstrom joining us coming up here next to figure out where do we go from here and what precedent does this set? That's next on KTIR.